Hello.
Hi.
My video working? Here we go.
Yeah, I can hear you.
Smart mic. Hello, can you hear me?
Yep.
Good.
Can't see you though.
Yeah, where's me? Where am I?
Good
Is it
question.
open?
Where
There
are
we are.
you? I hear you too.
Got a little thing on my camera. Sees magic. Open, close.
I've got two of you.
Okay, that's the usual thing.
So I will remove the one that is on mute.
Good idea.
I cannot remove you. No, I can't remove me. Oh, if I do that,
That's
then
all right.
maybe. That's right, I can do that. Right, bye.
Okay.
So that's that one gone. Just checking you can hear me okay.
Yep, we're fine. Yep. Got me smart mic working.
The smart mic.
Yeah, little one.
Why not your headset?
Well, I thought I'd try this one out.
Okay. It's reasonable.
Well, it's like, I've got a good camera in here. All I need is put this on and see how that goes.
Okay. We'll talk about that off air. Still got a couple of minutes to go while we're waiting for everyone to join.
Okay.
That's not what I need. Oh, gosh. Absolutely no idea.
What's going on?
Oh.
Anyway, what
We
time
are
towards?
on the hour.
Okay.
What would you like to do, Peter?
Let's begin then.
You want to begin? All right.
Yep.
So
Okay.
I will just open up the call then. So good afternoon from us. It might well be, Peter, I'm just going to mute you for a moment. Okay. Good afternoon from us here in the island of Thailand. In the island of Thailand is not an island, Thailand is an entire country. We're both on the island of Koh Phangan, and we are sending you greetings from the country of Thailand. It's coming into 6 p.m. our time, so it's coming into our evening. So a wonderful good morning, good welcome. Good welcome. Gosh. Who am I today? Let's get going, shall we? Today, Peter will be talking to you about ancestors. So our call this afternoon, the effects of ancestors on our lives, and then the workshop following afterwards, which will be happening at 1:30 the next hour, will be around working with your ancestors. So if you are a magical student, a magical membership student, please can you make sure that you have registered for the workshop happening today, if you are willing to join us. Otherwise, you can watch out for the recording. If you would like to understand how to work with your ancestors, then you are more than welcome to join us anyway. And all of the links will be put into the chat very shortly. And then just a note about our upcoming, or Peter's upcoming course in Thailand for the Ultimate Healing Point Holding Body Electronics. If you have any intentions of coming to Thailand and joining Peter for his 1, 2, or 3 week intensive, whichever you choose, then please do put any questions that you might have in the chat today and I can ask them. If you would like to private message those questions, you can. Peter is also going to be offering 15-minute online conversations with any of you, consultations. So if you are thinking of coming to Thailand, but you have some challenges or you're not sure about anything, then you can speak directly with Peter. And if you do have a question that you would like to ask Peter and have that 15 minutes with him, I am going to be setting up a calendar link where you can book that time. However, what would be really good is if you do have that question and would like to book the time, let me know, because when I've got that calendar link set up, I can send the link directly to you immediately so that you can get that time booked into Peter's calendar, and then you'll have more options because you will be one of the first. But as I said, if you have any questions about Thailand, please do put them in the chat today and I will get them asked. Peter, do you want to say anything about Thailand or anything that I've just mentioned? You are on mute. I've muted you.
Mute. Here we go. Okay. Well, it's for those who've done the online course, this is the next step, just to realize that when you're in a group working all day, you know, you've got all your energy is going to transformation. There's no distraction. You'll make much, much bigger breakthroughs. So you'll be doing every day, all week, basically, and you go deeper and deeper. Plus, you know, got the group energy supporting you. Got me right with you. And able to answer questions, any problems that come up. And so you're going to make much greater steps in your growth and clear away all the backlog of problems over lifetimes and come out totally free.
And very shortly, I'll put the link in the chat with regards to the Q&A that we recently had. So you can see any questions that were recently asked about coming to Thailand, as well as the benefits of doing the point holding in person. So, Peter, would you like to let everyone know what you're going to be looking at this afternoon in the workshop after this Q&A? What's going to be the content there with regards to working?
It's pretty much the same topic. We deal with ancestors. So in this later session today, I'm going to be actually taking you through methods of actually feeding your ancestors, how to actually remove ancestors that problem, how to actually get them working for you best and make sure the problem's removed. So you have a magical way of actually working with your ancestors to get results in your life. And we'll talk about today what I can help you with.
Fabulous. Thank you very much. So again, links will be coming shortly. And I think that's it from me. Is there anything else that you wanted to introduce or talk about before you go into today's topic, Peter?
No, we can go straight into it. Sure, wonderful. Everybody's waiting for it.
Okay, so I will spotlight you now and then okay. Over to you. Thank you very much.
Okay, so in the past, historically, ancestor reverence has always been a part of spirituality all over the world, in shamanism, Vayal cult, many other cultures. And we need to look at why it's forgotten and what it can actually do for you. Well, first of all, the ancestors are a part of you simply because they're in your DNA. As we're born, you know, with DNA in us, certain powers, potentials are passed down as well as the problems. But also there's something else more magically happening here, because where we're born, who we're born to, is a doorway to the next world. Therefore our parents, therefore their parents, all acting as doorways. We look at them all together, it's like you have a series of doorways going back to a source in a way, right back to history of humanity, your past potential, your ancient knowledge, back to the animal and plant humans, everything. Everything is actually within this kind of current of energy which comes through the ancestry. So there's quite a magical potential in this. And yet this seems to be forgotten with a lot of New Age thinking. People forget about the old traditional ways because they forget how to honour ancestors. So people often see ancestors as ghosts around that just people have for entertainment and wonder what they're doing with them. But actually, knowing how to work with them can make a huge difference to your life. First of all, let's look at the problems they can bring. Many of our problems are passed down in our genes, hereditary. this is obvious, things like hereditary diseases, things like haemophilia, which are often things like which are passed down through genes. So things in dentistry affecting you on the physical level, certainly. But also you see emotional patterns. Often you're learning the same patterns your parents learned, same limitations. And quite often people go through a lot of counselling trying to get rid of these belief systems, but you've got to realise that that's already in your DNA before you even actually learned from your parents in this life and passed down. This is knowledge in your genes is sometimes distorted. It's not all good. All limitations, our past mythology, past history, is all there on a genetic level. On a physical level, it's very hard to sort that out, you know, because you look at trying to genes and trying to actually configure your DNA. It's something scientists are working on, but actually when you look at their progress, they only understand 6% of the DNA. The rest are called junk DNA, simply because they don't understand what it does. So they're very far from actually dealing with the problem on that level. Traditional methods are more spiritual. We look at ancestors as beings we can talk to, because in a way they are. In our unconscious, everything still exists in the personified form. The ancestors, therefore, are still existing in our unconscious. When you go into the underworld, they're there. They hold on to their own patterns, which are now part of us. There are good and there's bad in there. So therefore, working with the ancestral spirits in the traditional shamanic ways is often far more productive. There's nothing else that does quite the same thing. So first of all, wandering ancestral spirits can help us to actually look at the problem areas and remove them. But also when we feed the good ancestors, they help look after us. Well, why couldn't they? Their family. Many of the good members of the family want to look after you. And because they also have a connection to your spirituality, almost like they're close to God in a way because you're on the other side, they almost take your prayers further. Plus your ancestors, those who did work magic, have their own spirits, their own Loa and so on working with them. Which means when you're on your ancestors, you've got all those working with you too. So your support system is greatly increased. So quite often in many shamanic cultures and in old practices like voodoo, honoring the ancestors is always the first step. That's the first doorway to open up a magical current that can change your life. So how does it work? Well, first of all, you know, when you actually start talking to the ancestors, because many people in the old cultures are kind of more in touch with the spirit world and never could talk with them, you realize there's the troublesome ones and there's helpful ones. And the basic magic was to do with actually moving troublesome ones, how to move them ones that aren't causing problems anymore. Now to feed the positive ones, they have more strength to help you. When they're there as part of your reality, part of your life, and because you have an ancestral altar that's kind of constantly working with, they hear your prayers, they amplify everything. They know what you need and therefore try and help you get it. Spirits working behind the scenes can often add a lot of help to what you're trying to manifest, because they're working on it too. And we have many things to do in this life, they have less distraction because they're not on this world anymore. It seems when they're on the other side, their only purpose is to help you, because you're the present kind of manifestation of that genetic current. If you look at it, you've got this whole pyramid behind you, because you've got two parents, four grandparents, and so on. You have this massive pyramid where you're at the tip. So if you can actually get in touch with that power, all these ancestral spirits and all their energy is there to support you. The important thing is to actually take the negative bits out and get this whole pyramid aligned so all the energy is with you. And this is basically what much of the traditional magic has been about. So we start with the ancestral reverence. That's the two things we do. We remove the negative and we support the positive. Then, of course, you can ask them for things on any level. They can help you with the high emotional problems, psychological problems, physical things as well. Help open doors and bring things to you. Help them push you in the right direction to actually get things you need in this physical world. Therefore, they help with every aspect of life. Of course, throughout your history of your family, there'll be specialists in all different areas. So somebody will be able to help you on something. That's the thing. Ancestral help can be very wide. There's very few magical systems that can actually do that. Most magical systems have certain spells, certain deities which work in certain ways. But if your ancestors actually encountered different deities over different cultures and all have different skills, you have a vast array of experience behind them. So therefore, they are very useful, but of course, when you're not dealing with them properly, they're also full of problems. As I mentioned, there's hereditary illnesses. Also, there's kind of limitations passed in the family. There are rules and regulations and things. Sometimes you've got a very rigid ancestor who's trying to hold you to the same rules, which might not agree with the way you're living your life now. Even in magic, there are some ancestors who be very religious and don't like you practicing magic, and they tend to block it. In your spirituality, there are some who have a certain fixed beliefs, and they keep you in those fixed beliefs to stop you from changing. So you see that it's just like people who are still there. So it's good to identify where the problems are, and then we have to find a way of actually acknowledging which ancestors they are, and moving them on. Now, we do have the power here because we are the ones who can feed them. Interesting thing is that these ancestors, when they, or their existence works planned, to have any impact on this world, need food. And the ones you feed, the ones you have strength. So you find in these magical cultures, such as in voodoo, we have control of ancestors by deciding who we feed. If they don't behave themselves properly, they don't get fed. A simple way of controlling, like you would with an animal. So the ancestors are helpful, get fed. If the ancestors are not being helpful, you don't feed them until they do. Very simple in a way. So we'll be looking at this more in the next call about actually how to feed ancestors and also the rituals that you use to actually remove the ones that are not helpful. Of course, in each tradition, there are different deities who govern ancestry. There's always the underworld god. In voodoo, for instance, we have Gede, who controls the ancestors. You can always ask him to take away troublesome ancestors and strengthen the positive ones. Also liberate ancestors who are still stuck in the karma. Liberating ancestors also liberates you. This is the thing, when you've got ancestors working with you, and they've got difficult karma, you are living that to some degree. When you liberate them, you are freed of certain patterns. That's why, particularly this is in the Indian rituals, in the Hindu ones, they would actually have various rituals to liberate your ancestors from their sins. Because when you do that, you're also liberated. So people took a lot of care to look after ancestors, because when you do so, you're looking after yourself. You want them to be free of problems, that you're free of problems. So we have this kind of oneness here. Also, we'll talk more about in tomorrow's call on Ho'oponopono to understand how we change others by changing ourselves. We'll see how this actually fits in. And this is our closest kind of connection. We work with those. We change ourselves and we change our lives as we change them. And that carries on the Ho'oponopono principle, where we change ourselves to change everybody around us, even those who are difficult in your life because they reflect shadow. Change yourself and they all change. But first of all, we change our ancestors. If they are healed and everything aligned, everything should be perfect in their lives. You have their strengths to call upon, but none of their problems. So when you release all these past problems throughout generations of ancestors, many of your limitations vanish. You'd be surprised how free you become in your thinking, your ability, and basically your magic. Because those limitations are no longer there, getting in the way of actually creating what you want. This is a big missing piece in modern thinking. People are always trying to find the psychological reasons why they can't manifest what they want. But often it's in the ancestry. And it's actually much easier to deal with there. There's no loads of counselling and processing mentally. You feed the ones that need help and you remove the ones which are a problem. That's simple. So this very simple practice can make amazing changes in your life. So the kind of level of return you get for your work is much greater. Many other things are a lot of hard work. But then you have a regular ancestral reverence in your life. Make huge differences, and it grows the more you work with it. So it starts having an ancestral altar, and when you actually learn to recognize your ancestors and feed them, you'll begin to be more aware of the different ancestors who are with you. Some you'll know about from your grandparents or deceased relatives, and they might still feel their presence, but you actually go much further back and find the stronger ones that's really about you. They're still there too. The more you work with them, you'll more become aware of them. An interesting thing, the simple medium, water, which we used to call them, is also a medium for scrying. The bowl of water you keep on your ancestral altar is enables you to see them, as well as call them. You can't get much simpler than that, can you? A bowl of water, that's your tool. So we talk about more later about how to deal with this. What I want to do now is simply make you aware that this is a big part of what you want to change in your life. So what I want to do most of this call is try to identify for all of you what problems could be dealt with in your life by dealing with your ancestry. And this can involve many things like money. If you've got poor ancestors, you often have that poverty consciousness. When you remove those, you're free of that. It can be in your love life. If you had certain rigid rules and they were kind of very cold, that affects your love life now. If you had cold parents, you know how that affects you. Cold ancestors do the same thing. There's no emotional bonding that holds back your relationships. Of course, the head of relationships, or you wouldn't be here. But they weren't necessarily good ones. When you get rid of that kind of disconnection, that coldness, so you can actually be free in that flow of emotion. That doesn't only affect your relationships, it affects many things in your life. You see, everything in our life is based on relationships. Apart from personal relationships, you have business relationships. Your money doesn't just fall out of the sky. It comes through people. Your relationships to people is a big part of determining how much money you get. Your health as well. In our healing, you often find we're dealing with emotional traumas. Where do they come from? People, of course. If there weren't people problems, you wouldn't have a lot of your diseases. because of all the emotional traumas to do with people. So you can see how those things, when you actually clear the kind of emotional blockage of your ancestors, can affect your health as well, affect your money, your health. I also want to point out that there's two particular areas that are dealt with by ancestry, particularly starting with the parents. You see, to a child, first of all, the main breadwinner, usually the father, is one who determines your prosperity consciousness, as we might call it. If your father doesn't earn much, then it's almost, this is your first view of what it's like to earn money. It's a hard time for you. On the other hand, we look to our mother for love. If your mother was cold, your ability to receive love is less. You often find that's also passed down their ancestry. Your mother might have had a cold mother and so on. And quite often, it's hard to actually find who started it. But there's a pattern in the ancestry, often linked to the mythology as well. When you go further back, you actually start dealing with the mythologies of those times which affected their development. This is all mixed up in the ancestry. So first of all, you're going to deal with the emotional problems, love problems, and money problems. Also health problems. And when you start looking at the way your ancestors work, you might be able to find any other ways your life could improve. It's good to know where you want to work to make the best change in your life. A lot of people don't even think about this. Quite often you've got a problem, you're going to find out what's the best way to change this. Some people only use the same old tools and don't realize that something else might work better in this particular situation. So I want to go over to questions and things now and see if we can help you actually identify what's in your life that could be changed in the best way.
At the moment, we have no questions come in, but that's not to say that questions are not coming in. So please, if you could type away, that would be very... Oh, here we go. Wonderful. So first question come in. Is the one bound to the earth when calling them in? Is one bound to the earth when calling them in for help? And is that a conscious choice of the ones that left?
Not really. You see, something remains. Quite often, our modern kind of a picture of the soul doesn't really embrace all the levels. Look at the older pictures, such as in Egypt, you had seven souls. Same within the kahuna system. They're the unihippili, which is the lower self, the omakua, and the middle self that moves on. So our conscious self isn't what moves, but something of the emotional body does. It's with us because it's in our ancestry, so therefore it's there. It's here. It is on the earth. It doesn't move. There's something which stays attached to us. There's another part that moves on. There's another part which stays here. That's the same for everybody. It's not like having an earthbound spirit. It's not the same. Earthbound spirits often stuck to the earth by their emotions. There's been some traumatic event or some attachment here and they won't move on. What's actually trapped there isn't a soul. It's an emotional body. This is why you find ghosts doing the same old thing, clanking the chains in the same spot and all those things, because they're held by a certain emotional pattern. When you see their behavior being repeated, you realize this is not a rational thing. There's no mind there, just emotion. Earthbound spirits are not really souls, they're emotional bodies. Ancestors are different. They have the emotional content, but it's actually what is in your genes. Therefore, they are attached to you, whether you like it or not. When we call them to feed them or to talk to them, it's not really making them more present. It's making more aware of them and opening up to communications, you can make change.
Great, thank you. There is another, more parts to this question. And what about ourselves? When we leave the earth plane and want to move on, are you still bound to solve the problems of the ones that came after you?
You're not bound. Probably you want to because you care. You came to this earth because you have interest in it. Although many people like to get away, they've forgotten why they're really here. It's meant to be fun. We have love. We have those we care for. Supposing now you've got children, you died now, would you really just leave them behind? No, of course you want to make sure they're okay. We choose to help them because we care. That doesn't limit us in other areas. The fact is, we can actually be off in heaven somewhere looking down and still helping our family.
Sorry, Peter, can you pause for a minute? Can you pause?
Yeah.
That's bizarre. I don't hear it.
It's going away here.
So, no, as in I don't hear it in the area.
No, it's over here. Yeah. It's just going by the road.
Yeah. Okay, anyway, that's much better. Thank you.
Okay. Where was I? So yeah, talking about these when we are on the other side, it's like, what else are you going to do? If you're free, no challenges, you've got more time for those you care about. That's the thing. You haven't got a 9-to-5 job to keep down. You haven't got the other challenges you have while you're on this earth. You're earning a living. You're much freer. You're much free to do other things as well, but of course you want to care for your people who you love. because some people are stuck here because they are so controlling, they can't let go of the people they think they want to control. So there's an exercise to it too. But there is choice, of course. The ancestors help you there because they care. Simple as that. They're not stuck.
And the third part to this question, what if you do not want to return but go back to the fairies? Will a part of your multidimensionary be able to freely assist here and there?
Well, of course we talk to fairies, don't we? The thing about fairies, they can actually journey into our world if they want to, but people don't often see them. So it doesn't really restrict them. Fairies are multidimensional, therefore more capable. So if you go into the fairy world and actually expand the magic in that dimension, they have even more power to influence this world as well. And that would be useful to your predecessors if they want to learn magic, because you have all this magic to help them.
How can we automate feeding ancestors offering through psionics? Is this possible? It would be a huge help.
Yes, we still feed them, but what we can do is actually create things which amplify the power of that food so they get a lot more energy out of it. I mean, I've actually got a plate up here which we actually put the food on for ancestors, so it's greatly amplified. So you put some food on there and it's like a whole feast for them because you charge it up. Basically, the psionics actually provides energy, but it needs to be given a certain flavour. See, ancestors like certain foods. When they lived here, they had their favourite foods, didn't they? When you feed ancestors, you've got to try and figure out what they would have liked. Of course, part of it is to do with where they come from, what culture they come from, what they would have eaten at those times. So you get an idea of what they like. It is possible, I guess, to actually create a psionic system that actually detects automatically what they like most and provide that amplified. I haven't done that yet, but that's an idea. But what I do have is a plate that simply charges the food. So I'm just put some food on it for them, and it greatly amplifies it, so they get more energy out of it and get more enjoyment and get fed more. But it is good to actually put some energy into feeding them anyway, because it's like a personal thing when you cook for somebody. When you prepare, part of the loving of your family is when you prepare the food, there's a kind of a personal touch to it. So it is nice to actually make food for ancestors and give it to them as well. But you can use psionics to amplify that.
Can you tell me more about the emotional body you just mentioned before?
Well, we have different bodies. The emotional body basically stores our emotions. Now, in the Kahuna system, Hawaii, they called it the Unihipili, which actually means the instinctive self. It's like the animal nature, separate from the conscious mind, which makes the choices. The emotional body was seen more as stored in the solar plexus area, what they called the Unihipili, or lower self. That experiences emotions, basically. So when we separate at death, our Unihipili can be separated from the other levels of mind. If it's too attached to this physical world through attachment or trauma, whatever, it remains. So what you've got left behind is all your emotions of that life. The soul can move on without those things. Emotions in an emotional body, there's a lot of intensity of those emotions, will still be here maintaining itself and feeding off similar emotions. Ghosts like that can actually cause problems for others because it wants to feed on the same emotion. Therefore, it'll trigger those emotions to others and keep it alive. So you find this way, find some hauntings are very negative this way. People have experienced negative emotions in those situations, when in those haunted places. Because it is just an emotional body. It's that lower part of yourself left behind through attachment and strong emotional experiences. Now, it gets more complicated than that, because actually you can actually be possessed by a past unibility of your own. This is a very complex thing. You sometimes work with an exorcism. It's so close to you because it's a past life part of you. Sometimes it's hard to recognize a separate thing. So people trying to solve emotions realize, no, there's an old body. It has to be removed from you. It's like an exorcism. But it's so well mixed with you, it looks like you. So there, you know, you get complications of this because emotional bodies get left behind. They can be attached. They try and maintain their own existence. So, you know, they can create problems for that reason. In the end, you want to break them down. We don't want past emotional bodies. You see, the emotional body of a past life was there to actually survive in that life. It's part of the instinctive self, which is here to survive. You know, you have the basic emotions of fear and anger and things for survival. You want to know when to run away, when to fight, when to eat, you know, all things to look after your survival. On the instinctive level, that is emotional. But it was there for a different situation. In this life, you had the emotional body from a previous one, which is very traumatic. It's actually far more alerted to be fighting all the time. So if that's in you now, it's no longer appropriate. It's why people sometimes have these problems with hyper alertness. It can actually be a new hippie from a past life that's still attached to them. Was become attached because they've been in the same place they've been before and it was hanging around there. There are many ways it can happen. But yes, these emotional bodies do get left behind. That's what causes these hauntings and can be attached to you as well.
Thank you very much. How about your siblings? So if your brother died, would he have the same impact as a parent who had died?
He can do. Now, usually when they die, they won't be helpful, first of all, because they need to move on. Generally, they'd say you'd leave them for a year and a day after death, and then you can actually feed them, and they'll come back then changed because they've been on the other side enough to actually move on. They have to move on first. That's the thing. They're not useful if they're still attached here. But yes, anybody who's died in the family, after a year and a day, can be brought back to, as the helper. Some degree, they want to help stay connected to the family and help out, and they want to be fed. So quite often that does work, yeah.
Could DNA tests help to find connections with our ancestors?
You could do, but it's not the best way, because when you do the ancestral feeding, you become more and more aware of them anyway. And obviously when we do things like voodoo and talk to Getty, he often tells you about important past connections. So the DNA test is very limited in a way. You know kind of what race they come from, but that's not much really, is it? Quite often, you know, when we do this ancestral work or work with the voodoo and talk to Getty, it's like you get far more guidance exactly what they do, what their abilities are, how to work with them, you know, what potential they bring forth with them.
What happens if one goes about life not feeding their ancestors?
Most people do, and they have the same problems they never solve. Same limitations go all through their life and never get solved.
How does it affect childless people?
Well, they haven't got anybody to pass it on to them, have they? Yeah, but they can actually be linked to kind of cousins, and you know, the family can be wide. Even if you haven't got your own offspring, there'll be family somewhere. But it's up to you, really, when you move on. You might want to just move on to this plane altogether, or you might have some compassion towards those you're connected to and want to do something with them. You might want to meet some of these people you've never met before.
And what about shame and sexual abuse? Can the shame be in the ancestral line and stuck there, so I can't really get away from it?
Yes, that's often the case. Quite often we find the person's problem is an ancestor who's been abused, or an ancestor who's abusive. They're both there. And both cause problems in different ways, both affecting you. Quite often if you've got abused ancestors, you're still holding that victim consciousness inside you. And the weakness and the kind of pain of it and everything. And they need to be moving on. On the other hand, could have an ancestor who was the abuser. And all that violence and all bad karma is in your system as well. The kind of hidden guilt and things like that.
So ancestors...
That's the ancestors you want to move on. The kind of abusers, the ones you don't want. Those ones you move on.
So ancestors are astral shells in the underworld question?
In a way, yes. Underworld is all unconscious, so they exist there, yes.
How can we find out in which area there is the most negative influence and blockages from ancestry?
I'm saying this is what you start with by looking at what the big problems are in your life, and also look at your parents. You have an idea of what's in the family that you hold on to as similar. If you've got the same money problems as your parents, that's a big clue. You've got the same dysfunctional relationship as your parents, that's another big clue. Those are the areas which are obviously coming down for ancestry because you see it in your parents too.
Thank you. Sorry, just scrolling back up. Will you might answer this in the workshop later, so please, Peter, if you want to save it, then do. But maybe you could give us a teaser. I like your style, Stefan. How and what methods do you use to separate the good and weed out the bad ancestors?
Well, that is quite a complex ritual, so I'm dealing with it later. But give you some clues. I mean, first off, you're doing voodoo, you simply ask Eddie. That's the simplest way. You tell them, you know, when you talk to Getty about your ancestral problems, he'll remove them for you when you feed them. Unless you feed, and it's that simple. But no other rituals we'll be doing, explaining, which it does involve some scrying, so you start to see those ancestors.
Sorry, moving from one thing to another. I am just now struggling with fear neurosis. I'm just now struggling with fear neurosis and add bipolar in my children and in myself. There is much fear on my mother's strain. It seems to be in our DNA.
There you go. That's a typical ancestral problem. We find out where it's gone wrong with these those ancestors. because quite often there was a split somewhere along the way because they're under great pressure and had to make a big choice between two parts of themselves and could only feel for one or the other. And that's kind of conflict that needs to be taken out. There are certain ancestors who need liberating and moving on. They need healing as well. There are bad ancestors you want to remove, but there's actually traumatized ancestors who want actually healing and liberating.
You were talking about the emotional body, I believe. So Gwen is asking, is it not possible for the emotional body to dissolve?
It depends on how much emotion is there. If it's like a haunting, it's like it's there because it's so strong it's still feeding. Many other emotions just go. That's why they don't all cause hauntings.
Can we create an Egyptian Shabti, I think I've pronounced that correctly, a servitor mm-hmm. that helps ancestors in their world after they have passed away to help them where they are in their world? Let's say these Shabtis could help them with food, building, shelter, etc.
Yeah, you can. You've got to realize the limitations within the Egyptian system, though. It's just like they'd limit you to the same things in the other world as you did in this world. Like if you're gardening in this world, you'd be gardening in the next world, for instance, and you'd be doing the same work. And the trouble with that is you actually carry on those limitations in your next incarnation as well. You don't really want those things. You can change that, yes. The idea of a Shabti can be useful as a kind of servitor that's going to look after your ancestors. What I would do is actually, if you work in the Egyptian system, work with Osiris, of course, because he rules the underworld. But also in Voodoo, we work with the Gedi. You often see the similar thing in Voodoo. People have these little kind of figures on the altar, which are ancestral guardians. They're there to look after your ancestors. This actually gives more strength to the ancestral line as well. So when you do your magic, they're strengthening that too, because it makes your ancestors stronger. So yes, you do make them ancestral guardian spirits this way.
Is Parkinson's also a possible, or rather several attachments from the emotional body?
It's possible. I mean, it can have many different causes. I mean, basically, it's a nervous problem, as we know, things gone wrong. But most nervous problems are there because you're not in control of your own nervous system. It's a split between the middle self and the lower self, according to the Hooners. There's many ways of healing that. But yes, quite often there is a kind of mixture going on there where your kind of ancestral problems add to your own emotional traumas and create these blocks.
Okay, so a long question, so bear with me, please. Many years back, the Loire told me that none of my ancestors were any good and they aren't worth feeding. Although they had previously told me that way back in ancient Egypt, I had some good ones, but then they seemed to change their minds about this. My mum's dad was a kind man, but following the Loire and your advice, I decided to take on a new ancestry of the Javanese masters as I had the strongest connection. Oh, sorry, I think, you know, someone's trying to call me. With them. I've been so busy feeding the Loire and other gods that I haven't kept up the regular feeding of the Javanese masters. Could this be part of the reason for my current serious health problems, as they are so highly spiritual and have less need for the physical food? Are they happy with a scented flower such as a rose, an aromatic scent, a white candle, or what else should I feed them?
No, ancestors need food. Now, the thing is, when you initiate into magical system, you take on the ancestors of that tradition, which is very useful because now you've got magical ancestors. Very useful you work in magic, because now you've got your ancestors are magicians too. You can adopt ancestry this way. If you're an adopted child, you have two sets of ancestors. Your genetic parents, as well as your adopted parents, you have both lines of ancestors working behind you. When you join the tradition, you have those ancestors too. So therefore, you can be selective which ones are useful. It is quite possible that, you know, none of your genetic ancestors really useful to you because they all came from such limited lines, and you know the need releases many generations back, and it's so complex that you probably can't be bothered to go right back to find some good ones. It's much easier to take on some new ones if there's a tradition here that you're joining. That's the easiest way to go. So it's not true that there are no positive ancestors further back. It's probably that it's not worth looking for them when there's something in front of you that's much easier to absorb. If you take on the ancestors of a tradition, you're still feeding the ancestors on your altar. You kept in the same practice. So whoever the ancestors are, you still need to feed them.
I was told that I'm carrying a lot of sadness and sorrow from my past lives and ancestors. How can I clear that?
Say it again.
I was told that I'm carrying a lot of sadness and sorrow from my past lives and ancestors. How can I clear that?
If it's past lives, you ought to go into those and actually release it yourself. The ancestors, you obviously feed them and liberate them. In this case, you'd ask Eddie to liberate them because they need to be healed of that. They need to move on in a harmonious way rather than to be taken away because of trouble.
does the old practice of burying people with tools and things that they had in this life to have in the next life, does that have, is something that has any effect on them?
It does. I was talking about how they did in Egypt. They believed they had to do the same job later in the afterlife, in the underworld. So therefore they give you these tools. They did these bindings so you'd have the same job in the afterlife. But that does limit you. So the energy is still with you later on. It keeps, restricts you in the next life because it does try to pull you back to the same job, which you might not want to do anymore. So you want to move on and learn new skills. So yes, these things are restrictive. And quite often the bit of the soul is stuck in whatever is actually limiting it there. Like for instance, with Egyptian rituals, I found people's soul parts stuck in their little canoptic vessels that their organs are buried in. So because actually the ritual mummification was there to actually give them that role in the afterlife. And that was binding them. But it's the soul attached to those canoptic vessels. Sometimes with ontology, people like to retrieve it from some of these statues and things and from the canoptic vessels. Same thing if somebody's had tools buried with them, there might be that grave is still acting like a black to which holds part of their soul. It needs to be liberated from that so they can be free.
Why ancestor money? Oh, hang on. Why ancestor with money, God, Jade, Emperor, whatsoever? Okay, I'll read it as it says. Why ancestor money with money, God, Jade, Emperor works so well in ancestor offering? Why there is a dilation? Let's say I offer 10,000, they get 1,000 in their world.
Okay, that's ancestral money. That's more from the Feng Shui system. They actually create little things to represent money in their world and give it to the your family, your spirits. It keeps them happy. Now, that does involve their ritual behind it. The kind of Feng Shui masters who produce these things have done the ritual, so it works. Otherwise, it wouldn't. There's certain magic involved here where you can actually give money to your ancestors. You can give them all kinds of things. I've noticed that with some of the Chinese systems and the Feng Shui, people give them... They've had a deceased children, they give them little gifts like a bicycle and things they can now ride in the other world as if they're still alive. You know, they give the same gifts through these little kind of magical papers. So these Feng Shui objects are prepared in order to give gifts to your ancestors or to your family who died.
Miriam is asking...
It doesn't actually make you rich, but it actually keeps them happy.
Miriam is continuing with her questions. She's asking, so what should I feed the Javanese masters? And is my neglect of feeding them a big part of the reason of my current health problems?
I think your current health problem was there before you started messing with ancestors, but feed them what they would like. In Indonesia, they're going to like quite spicy foods, actually, like they do over here. Rice, fish, you know, curries, things like that. As well as fruit, of course. There's plenty of fruit growth there that I like. It is quite traditional, actually, to offer fruit in Indonesian rituals anyway. It's one of the most common things to put in the altar. So give them plenty of fruit.
And how often should you feed your ancestors?
Once a week is good. I find if you have like a special day, like on Sunday, we make your Sunday dinner, you involve them as well. You make some for you, you give them some to the ancestors, so like part of the family. But also there are special events, such as Halloween, or just the day after, that was called Fat Gedi and Voodoo. There's certain days which are, you know, traditional for our ancestors, like the Day of the Dead in Mexico. Special days like that are great for feeding the ancestors. That's when they should be honoured.
Sorry, I was on mute. I never met anyone from the African side of my family. They were from Mozambique, they lived in tribes, no registrations, official names, and practice magic. My mother lost total connection with them when she came to Portugal with my father. Growing up, I used to hate them, even though I never met them, as my mother was very different. As I get older, I feel more and more drawn to their lifestyle. I feel interferences in my magical work that I can't identify the source. Could it be them? Should I start by asking for forgiveness and acceptance?
That's definitely a good thing to do. See, quite often the problem is simply that they have a different magic from yours. They're trying to help, trying to actually show you something. This is very typical in these African traditions. For instance, when I was called to voodoo, now it's not just my family because I'm not from an African family, but what I found is that some things suddenly stopped working. So I say it's time for a change. You're not going to let you go until you listen. I remember having a reading from a kind of New Orleans voodoo queen. She pointed out that the Lord calling me, that's when nothing's working. Nothing was going to work until I responded. everything else suddenly stopped working because they're saying now it's time for another step. You've got to listen. This is quite often how they work. Thing to do is to answer the call. Feed your ancestors, study their ways. Create the ancestral altar, let them in, then they will help you. And they'll open the door for you to actually learn their magic. One way or another, it'll come.
Takes one on the ancestry. Okay, I'll read it again as it says. Takes one on the ancestry of one's partner through sexual intimacy, ? Do you understand that?
Yeah, you don't actually take on their ancestors, but obviously the ancestors actually are watching. You know, if your partner's not good for you, then the ancestors are kind of watching them as well and trying to sort things out and hopefully get rid of them for you because they're not doing any good. So they tend to interfere to that degree, just as your parents might. You could have seen the ancestors if they were alive, just as if you had parents around, they'd actually criticise your relationship and they might notice bad things that you're not noticing yourself because you're kind of too caught up in it, you see what I mean, and they can actually have their own influence. You don't take on the partner's ancestors unless you're actually really close when you get married. You're actually quite often ancestor sharing now because obviously your children are inherit both lines of ancestry, so they are kind of blending. But until you actually get to that point of getting married and having children, they're not your sharing ancestors yet.
Peter, can I ask you to just move your microphone away from your neck? Because it's, I think it's muffled because it's touching you. Speak. Can you say something?
Okay, how's that?
No, you've turned it upside down now.
Oh, the microphone's still this side and sticking out a bit.
Okay. No, that hasn't helped. That's okay. Not to worry. I thought it might do. All right, let's move on to the next question. What do we do with the food after, and how long do we leave the food? How do we know if they have received the gift?
Well, first of all, if you try and eat it, it's tasteless. The energy's all gone. So you know it's been eaten already. So basically, you put it out in nature. It only needs to be left until the candles burnt down. You could usually overnight and put it out the next day, just throw it out in nature. That way, you know, the spirit world is the closest to nature, and when nature takes it, it's like the spirits are taking it. That's the last step of actually releasing it. So just put it outside in nature somewhere. Something will eat it.
Egyptian buried spells items with their pharaoh so that their pharaoh could wake up on the other side with all the things they needed, including shaptis. Can we send items, etc. now on the other side so that when we wake up in the next world, those items are waiting for us? A lot of who pass away wake up on the other side without much apart from the clothes that they were buried in.
Well, this is where it's good to have ancestors, because what we do with the funerary rite is that's when you cross over, yes, so they're there to actually meet you and take you forward, you're being looked after, you're not alone. But of course, you can pass things on as well, magical things in particular. I think objects you have a strong magical connection with, which have spirits to them, will follow you to the other life anyway. Your magical tools will be there. You don't really need anything else, because things of this life you don't need there. The ancestors will take you on and show you how to do things there. Just like when you're born here, you know, you have a whole new life here, you don't have to bring things from the other world. You're born with nothing, your parents look after you, and then you gradually build your own life. It's very similar when you cross over to the other side. You don't need to bring anything.
Your microphone just became clearer. I have a couple of pre-submitted questions that are not topic related. At the moment, we have no more ancestor questions in the chat. So I'll go over to those questions if that's okay.
Yep.
She says, and she can't find them. Here we go. Question number one. Can there be healing for the heart valve disease, specifically mild to moderate regurgitation of the mitral and tricuspid valves?
Yeah. There's several things here. Obviously, the heart muscles themselves can be damaged, but also the heart firing mechanism, the pacemaker bits, could be electrical out of balance. And there's different points we work on those with. The point holding does it very well. There's a heart point on the side. Heart firing mechanism is kind of about here between the second and third ribs. When the source wasn't hold, that's often release that and get the mechanism working better.
Thank you. Next question. I made eared willow wands for my sons to solve their dyslexia. Can I upgrade them with the Dragon Sutra, or can that conflict with their tree spirit? Can you make them more powerful using crystals or gems?
Oh, yeah. The Dragon Sutra will strengthen everything because it's very natural. It will feed the tree spirits to actually have more power. With crystals and gems, you've got to actually pair them with the tree spirit properly. So it takes a bit of intuition here, because crystals are living things too. Now, the useful thing is that the tree spirit is more in tune with you. The crystal is a more distant kind of consciousness, hard to actually work with consciously. The tree spirit will actually work with the crystal and tell it what you need. For example, you might say, you know, quartz puts out a certain frequency. That's why you're using things like quartz watches, because it's frequency so precise. Well, it can produce a different frequency if it's asked to. If you say put a crystal on a quartz crystal on a tree spirit bond, the tree spirit will actually tell the quartz what frequency it needs to produce to actually heal your body. That's the kind of way they work together. But you have to actually match the tree spirits and the crystal spirits carefully by being intuitive to make sure they want to communicate well.
Thank you. And continuing with the same topic, how do you keep and maintain your wands?
Wands don't need much maintenance. They're kind of very self-sufficient anyway, because tree spirits like that. They feed straight from the ethers. But of course, you want to preserve it so it doesn't go off. So you generally use beeswax and linseed oil to give it a good polish, so it's not drying out too much or getting wet or damaged or anything. Apart from that, some essential oils now and then feed it. Woody oils such as sandalwood and cedar are very good for it. Just put a little bit of those on it and actually feeds the spirit.
So that was beeswax and linseed oil for the protection. Yeah. And then which essential oils?
Just to polish it with. Essential oils such as sandalwood and cedar to feed. Just a little drop now then to feed it.
Sandalwood and cedar. Thank you very much. And Esther would like to know, could you please do a workshop about wands and trees?
Yeah, I generally do that. I always do that as part of the shamanic healing course, but it had to be live, so we need to find a place we can take you to meet the tree spirits. Really, that one needs to be done in person. You know, there is a lot of information in my book anyway telling you how to do it. You know, the Working with Tree Spirits Shaman Healing book, that's a good place to start. It tells you how to do it, but actually you would have to be in person workshop to actually take you out to the trees to do this. On my shamanic healing professional course, we did have some videos of it though, so there are those you could do.
So staying on non-topic related questions, this one is from Stefan and it's regarding Chandali level 7. So question number one, for the initiation and daily prayer, it says to recite Om Ami Di Wahri as many times as possible. What is a good amount that we should shoot for? One mala or 10 malas?
With all these Chandali ones, I tend to do it as long as you want while the heat's rising. So I didn't really count it. I just kept doing it, say half an hour or something. Also meditating, just not over the couch, just kind of gently reciting it while letting the heat rise, basically.
And question number two, the appendix says that Zug is a dragon deity, but the daily mantra is the Amitabh mantra. Does this mean that we do Zug initiation, we will also be attuned to the Amitabha Buddha as well? Thank you.
It wasn't, because this actually came from that tradition. It was actually a Buddhist dragon initiation.
Okay, thank you very much. All right, so moving on now with topic related questions. We still have a few moments left. I live in a city, so it's difficult to put the food out in nature. Do you have any other suggestions?
Any way you like, then. So if you just try and take it outside and off it to the wind first and then throw it away somewhere, it'll be okay, as long as you actually make that connection to nature. Even if you put it in a dustbin by a crossroads or something, because the crossroads is an important doorway too.
Okay, and now we're going back. Yeah, go on.
There's like a fountain in the city. Sometimes you do find dustbins here and there. If you find one of the crossroads, that'll be a perfect space to put it.
Going back to non-topic related questions, regarding your new psionic Dantian plate, if there is any time left, well, there is, Stefan, so I will ask it. How long approximately will it take the plate to build our three Dantians? Are we talking weeks, months or years?
It's gradual. It keeps going and going and going. It might take a few weeks to actually release those ghosts and worms I spoke about. But then from there, it continues to develop them continuously. So it gets stronger over the weeks, months and years.
Part two of the question, is this plate like some of your others where we are allowed to print out copies and we can use it to put our family members and friends on?
That's possible, yes, because all these are kind of repeatable kind of servitors which can be split every time you print one, yeah. But obviously they should need to know what it's about, because it's actually quite a deep kind of magical work, this one. If you've got family members who are actually working and understand how they need to remove these ghosts from their dandians, then great, it'll work with them well.
So that kind of answers part three of the question, which is, and if he can, then can we just put them down or should we tell them and get permission beforehand?
It's best to talk to them about it first.
And what sort of results can we expect in the long run after it builds our Dantian? Will the overflow of energy will also start clearing our channels and much greater Tanaga Dalam development?
Oh, yes. You get stronger, you're healthier, you age less quickly. Everything, really, because as your chi is stronger, you're healthier and more alert and everything's better.
So moving away
remember
from
that... Remember, the three Dantians work at different levels. The first Dantian is about the physical energy. Obviously, the higher one, the Shen, is actually your spiritual energy, so it's going to improve that as well. It will improve your spirituality, your clairvoyance, your intuition, your connection, all those things.
Moving away from that topic, where do you teach any methods of building up condensed vital force into the kind of power that we work to get back with soul retrievals, like breathing power, once we have finished with soul retrievals, so that we have a way to continue building up the same kind of power?
Don't quite understand what you mean here. Obviously, soul retrievals are the things you need missing pieces so to make it easier. Otherwise, it's basic to the Dalam practices, which keep building your power, the breathing.
The Tanaga Dalam practices.
Yeah, there's many more levels than obviously. Just like I do the Chandali upgrades, if people want to carry on the Petana Dalam upgrades, I can do that on a weekly basis for donation as well. Because there are many more which keep enhancing the level of power you can gain through breathing.
Oh, Barbara, that's really horrible to hear. I'm very sorry. Barbara's had a fall and she's hurt her left arm and it's bruised from shoulder to elbow. What point would you recommend to hold as all of it hurts?
First one would be triple 5, so kind of on the wrist here.
And Barbara,
that's where effect will be up on.
Don't forget, we've got our online point holding happening next weekend. If you wanted to join and you wanted to, well, it's a long time to wait and to be in pain for.
You could do that straight away. Just hold that point for a while and see how it goes. It doesn't have to be a long point holding because it's more like an acupuncture point. Holding it, say, for half an hour, which would shift something. Mm.
Do get in contact, Barbara, if you need any more help with that one. Miriam, do the Javanese masters also like flowers and scents?
Yep. Flowers are also good, but the most important thing for ancestors is actually food.
And if your ancestors are Australian, let's say, and we use Gede to liberate your ancestors, would this be a problem if they don't believe in that spiritual tradition of the Orishas?
Doesn't matter. The spirit will still move them on. Thing is, once you actually die and go over to the other side, you discover new stuff anyway, and this is where you have your belief system starts to break down a bit.
Great, thank you so much. So as we were saying, and the links have gone in the chat because we are coming to the final few minutes of our session now. The links have gone in the chat. If you would like to join the continuation of this topic, where Peter will be talking how to work with ancestors in much more detail. And if you would like a hot seat so that you can get to talk directly to Peter about your particular issue or ancestor question, then please do register and join us for the workshop that is happening in exactly 36 minutes. If you are a Magical Member student, please make sure you register to get the link. And if you would like to join us for a one-off, then the link is also in the chat. We've got one more question come in. Does the 3 Dantian plate also help to clear links with people that are draining you, as well as the ghosts and the worms?
It will, yes. Because remember, apart from the ghosts and worms, it's got to programs in there to remove all what we call the cords of death, which involves cords to people as well. It removes everything that would drain you.
So if I could just ask, please, that the link goes in so that Barbara can get the link quickly. Thank you very much, admin. And then, Stefan, with a serious bear problem... Huh? Okay, right. So I was wondering what Stefan was going on about, but of course, if with a serious bear problem, even crossroads or any nature, it would be unwise to leave out any food. Just to clarify, I wondered what he meant by bear. But just to clarify, I can toss in the wind and then pick them up and throwing it in the garbage. If I apologise for not being able to put it in nature, it won't nullify anything.
No, that's fine. But what I would suggest is walking a long way from your home so the bears, so it doesn't matter if the bears eat it.
Wonderful. Okay, so as I said, links going in. We had had someone request some time with you, Peter, so thank you very much. I'll make sure that person gets booked in with you.
Okay.
So did you want to let everybody know what you will be talking about next month on the Q&A's? Do you know? Can you remember?
Oh, I can't remember. We've got something down. I can't remember what it was at the moment. But, you know, with these Q&A's, you can ask anything anyway. So I'd just like to start you off on something.
Yeah, of course. So the next month's workshop is going to be healing, guiding, and protecting children and the vulnerable. So if you work with the vulnerable or children, or you have them yourself in your family, then this topic will be for you, because it's about how to heal, guide, and protect them. So that's in the workshop that is happening next month in May, and that is on the 6th of May. So I'm assuming, Peter, you will be talking about something around this topic.
Something about it, but again, if there'll be any requests, put them in, and I'll talk about anything you like.
And what's super exciting, which I'm desperately waiting for, is the topic that you will be talking about in June, and that is the mastery of time. So how can we get more done, or how can we slow down and manage and manipulate time so that we can get done everything that we need to do in the time that we have? Sorry, bear with me 1 second. There we go. All right. So that is it. So I'm going to conclude the call there, because that is all the questions that have come in. So thank you very much, everybody. Barbara's saying that the point holding session clashes with the coronation. There's a coronation happening.
That's very important, is it?
I didn't even know that was happening. It's a thing.
Who's being crowned?
Well, wouldn't it be Prince Charles?
Would think so, yeah, but thought he's being arrested, isn't he?
Or something. Barbara, tell us, who's being crowned? Because we just don't know. Living all the way out here. You're very welcome, Miriam. Thank you, Miriam. And I will hope we'll be speaking to you in 30 minutes anyway. We'll see you on the next one. And it was Jen who wants to book time. So, Jen, I need to get your email. Can you send me your email quickly, please, Jen?
Your of time.
Yeah, that even.
Request to email me and we'll set up a time then. That's you to us both. Let me know what times you're free. We'll sort something out.
Let's make it clear. You can either let me know that you would like to book a time with Peter by sending me your email address right now, or you can email Peter directly to arrange that time also, and then you'll get 15 minutes with him. So, yes, you are very welcome. Oh, it's King Charles and Camilla. What is it, a double crowning?
King Charles, of course, isn't it, yeah.
Is it a double crowning? I don't know. Right, I've got that, Jen. Thank you so much. I'll make a note of that. Any other questions? Keep them coming. I'm going to keep it open for one more minute. Otherwise, we can go. All right. So that's it. Will this booking be used for the private bookings? I don't know what that means, Stefan. Sorry, you'll have to say that again. 1 hour. Can be used for private hour, bookings. Yeah. No, Stefan, it's literally just to book 15 minutes with Peter to talk about any challenges or questions that they have with regards to coming to Thailand, the suitability of the course, and whether it's right for them, so they can speak directly to Peter about that. If you want to
actually, you can feed your ancestors to get you there as well. That's interesting that whenever I did my voodoo initiation, the first thing I told us to do was feed our ancestors to make sure they get us there, make sure the money comes in, all problems removed. Ancestors help with that too.
Well, there we go.
If you want to get there and you have problems, feed your ancestors. Ask them to get you there.
So something else to consider. But Stefan, if you wanted to book a session, a healing session or a private session with Peter, then you could just contact him directly and then he will make that booking with you. Okay, everyone, I will conclude the call here. We will speak to those who are joining us for the workshop in 30 minutes. Thank you so much. Have a wonderful rest of your weekend. And hopefully we'll see the majority of you again tomorrow on the students Q&A, where Peter will continue his... I can't say the word, Peter. What are you talking about tomorrow?
Hopo.
That one. I'm not even going to try. So we'll speak to you all then tomorrow on the students Q&A, if, of course, you are a student of Peter's. Thank you so much. Have a wonderful rest of your day. Speak to you later.
All right.
Goodbye. Bye.